very happy to have our good friend Tom Bryan on hand to help us out. What we are going to do for today is two things before we get going anywhere else. We're going to be we're probably going to go until about 10:20, and then we're going to adjourn the meeting until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Recess this meeting until 4 o'clock this afternoon. Also, we are going to ask the members. I better ask them right now if they think, since we've lost some time here, if a Thursday evening meeting after Crime and Corrections would be acceptable or not, if we were going to try to meet from, say, 5 to 7 o'clock tomorrow evening.
Most happy to accommodate, Mr. Chairman, due to the lost time.
Thank you, Representative Bryan. Is it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Calori and I are scheduled to meet for 2 hours tomorrow evening on sentencing guidelines from 5 to 7. And it took us half hour of scheduling to get that arranged, so I'm reluctant to break that.
Monday of next week.
Let's
do an evening meeting.
Let's just plan a Monday of next week. Any good for the two members that are here?
As far as I know, Monday will work.
Let's go for Monday at.
Monday would be civil, so we'll try for Monday at 5 o'clock.
That should work.
Representative Miller is looking real chipper today.
Representative Miller?
He's gotten better looking.
Yeah. Poor.
Looks more like a Democrat, but he.
Yeah. I would just want to say the committee, it's necessary for you, gentlemen and lady, to move as quickly as possible, ASAP. In fact, you should gird your loins, as it were, and make this your number one priority.
We'll certainly do that, okay. Mr. Super Chair.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to tentatively schedule.
Loins girded.
Let's just schedule it, and then if there's a problem, we'll try to yank it.
Monday the something. What's the date next Monday?
Monday. And we have civil. Let's schedule for. Schedule for 5.
6.
Is your preference? Is your preference to start later or
Monday?
Yeah, we're going to lose Representative Miller because I think he doesn't like to be here in the evening. But then
I think the earlier the better. Then
let's start at 5.
I would say right after the 15 minute break after the civil sub or floor session, whichever we have.
Okay, that's going.
Okay.
It's going to be our next meeting, and we're going to adjourn till recess till 4.
Today.
Back and right now, with help of counsel, we're going to try to go through as many of the technical and other little amendments that we can to get through the various sections of the bill that we haven't dealt with yet.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the way I'd like to start today is have everybody have the -6 amendments in front of them. Please place the -6 amendments in front of you. Let me just walk through them quickly and highlight for you the changes that the committee has adopted that are now showing up in the -6 amendments. My recommendation is just note them, and then when we meet either this afternoon or next week, if you don't like the way they look, or if you have further comments on those sections that we've added in so far, we can take them up at that time. Page 1, lines 22 on, is where the definition of misdemeanor involving violence was added. Page 3, line 1, first class postage was added. I would note to the committee that on line 6, we didn't, and also Representative Mannix's notation about it can be hand delivered was also noted in there. On line 6 of that, on page 3, it talks about the duplicate sheet being hand delivered or mailed, and for some reason we didn't get a first class postage added in there too, so the committee may want to make that amendment. Page 3, line 6, hand delivered or mailed.
We're in work session, so I'll move that amendment.
Okay.
Any objection?
Thank you. Lines 13 and 14 add certified mail. Line 17, I think we need another amendment, just if we're going to do all this postage stuff cleanly, another first class mail in the middle of line 17.
Let's move it. Any objection?
Now, starting on page 3, line 25, is the rewritten section that talks about it shall be unlawful for any division of state or local government to compile or maintain any information on lawful purchases of firearms. Any employee who intentionally violates this is guilty of a Class C felony. And starting on page 2 of line 4 is Representative Clark's language about commencing a civil action to force compel an agency to not keep a list, and attorney's fees would be awarded if possible. That goes through line 6.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
I don't want us to spend a lot of time on this issue today. I understand that the law enforcement people have some comments on this approach, and maybe we could get to that at our next meeting. And in any event, I'm not sure that this language, lines 2 through 6, is what I had in mind. But I'll just flag that issue for the chair.
Thank you, Representative Clark. We'd be certainly happy to have you help us by drafting appropriate language to plug in there. I think we can amend it in. Please proceed.
Page 4, lines 18 and 19 and 20 is where the committee added in the other exception and the police officer language. It's also where the language was deleted regarding advertising, and the language regarding securely wrapped came out. That's 20 and 21. The new language on 22 through 26, which replaces 22 and 20, 24 through 26 replaces 22 and 23. Page 5, starting on line 3, this was as a result of Representative Maddox's amendments that rather than having the forms be in the statute three times, that it be there once with the noted changes specified. So the next couple of lines you will see how they accomplished taking the forms actually out of the statute and giving direction to the Attorney General about how to make them. You'll then see on page 6, and the committee's looked at this before, the issue of identification, and actually comes up in two places. If you go to page 4, lines 14 and 15, there's the language about two pieces of current identification, one of which must bear a photograph. And then if you look on the form, which is now on page 6, starting on line 26, that's where that shows up in the forms. You'll note beginning on page 7 that the duplicate form gets deleted. Now, page 9.
Mr. Chairman? Yeah. Holly, you're saying that the duplicate form shown on page 7 is deleted?
Correct. In the way that, because it's all in bracketed, it's all bracketed. So that's all coming out.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
All right. Okay. I just, in case you question, that's going to ultimately come out. Now, starting on page 9 is the list that the committee worked on that talks about who the prohibited persons are who can purchase a firearm. The changes that were made were lines 17 and 18, which deals with the issue of persons committed to the Mental Health Division under the Civil Commitment Statutes, and lines 19 through 23, which was the language that the committee adopted to deal with persons who are, I guess, for lack of a better word, criminally involved with drugs or alcohol.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bryan.
Holly, how about the provision on the temporary hold, police temporary hold situation?
The committee did not address that via amendment yet. There are some situations that the committee might want to consider adding into this list. The temporary hold situation, other kinds of hospitalizations, other sorts of things, which we can address when we do Section 4, which we're going to start today. Okay. But we started with the committee dealt with the most narrow, the most objective, and that for which there are actual records, for lack of a better word. And so that's what 17 through 23 is. Okay. Page 10, bottom of the page. This has come up a couple of times in terms of felony convictions and marijuana offenses, which were originally excluded, are now offenses for which somebody can be convicted and held or whatever. And the only other change that the committee adopted last time, which shows up in this bill, shows up on page 34, and it's the new section 31. And it reads as follows: the duplicate and triplicate sheets submitted to local law enforcement agencies and the Department of State Police under sections 29 and 30 shall be destroyed within a reasonable period of time after the information needed for the study has been transferred from the sheets. The committee in their amendment really adopted a conceptual amendment, and that was the way the language came out. So if the committee is not comfortable with that, that's the language that they need to be working on.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you, counsel.
Now. Moving along then into the working document, I think that we should start on page 9, which deals with the whole issue of mental health reporting. If you look in the original printed version of the bill, and this has been through numerous drafts, let me just kind of set the stage for a discussion and then show you. There has been some language proposed. There's some concern about it. Let me just lay the issues out for the committee.
We're on page 7 of the working document, right?
I am on page 7. No, I'm on page 7 or 8 of the working document. I'm on page 7 of the working document. You will also find in today's handout a one-page sheet that's entitled New Section Section 4 Language, which I'm in the process of rewriting only because lines 3 through 16 are all one sentence. And we decided that that was a little long sentence. But let me just kind of lay the issues out for the committee, and then we can go from there. It was extremely important, I think, to all the members of the working committee that was put together by the speaker that there somehow be a mechanism whereby persons who were not officially in the system, i.e. persons who were not convicted of misdemeanor or felony offenses, which would put them on the prohibited persons list, persons who had not been civilly committed, could somehow be brought to the attention of the appropriate authorities in order to affect their ability to purchase guns. And also purchase firearms, and also to get concealed weapons permits, because this, I think, would apply as well. The original language that was drafted was considered to be problematic for a variety of reasons. And there has been a lot of work put into how do you come up with a reporting requirement that accomplishes that which you want to accomplish, at the same time, I think, limits the exposure of the provider, that doesn't create over-reporting, that doesn't create under-reporting. There's a whole bunch of issues there. I will share with the committee that there was an original concern raised about the issue of confidentiality. I think that that is something that the legislature can clearly abrogate.
Counsel, what's the definition of mental health provider?
In the definition that people are working with is in the working document, page 8 and 9. So it's a superintendent or director of a hospital for the mentally ill or a training center for the mentally retarded, a private mental health care facility, which is basically a private hospital, a community mental health program, and then all persons licensed in the state of Oregon to practice either psychology or psychiatry. The original bill dealt with all physicians. There was some concern about overbroadness there. You'd potentially give dermatologists, pediatricians, and others that duty to report, because you are creating a duty to report.
Let me know when you're finished.
I'll take a deep breath. Anyway, just let me just note a couple of the issues that were raised and some subsequent information that we've gotten. Anyway, the issue of confidentiality, I think, is one that even though you are turning over information that is potentially confidential, it is something that specifically the legislature can require. And so I think that issue, which was raised, can be handled legally.
Counsel, please explain that one again there.
There's basically a confidentiality provision mm-hmm. that would prohibit them from turning the names over. However, since it is a statutorily created mm-hmm. privilege or level of confidentiality, the legislature can just as easily take it away. And, for example, in child abuse reporting situations and other reporting situations, they have said you can take that issue of confidentiality away. The other way that it's been, I think, handled and looked at is that the information that the provider would be turning over is extremely limited. And if you look at the one-page handout, the provider is only turning over the name, address, date of birth, and sex without going into any information about the diagnosis and history and any of that kind of stuff.
So it would be making a declaration that in their professional opinion, this person should not
be
allowed to purchase a firearm?
Yes, that based on, and at this point you can turn to the new language in Section 4, because I think that that's the most, for those people that agree that there should be a reporting requirement, and that there's not consensus there because there are some problems with it, that would be based on when a provider feels that in the reasonable professional judgment of the provider, the patient or client has been or is reasonably likely to be a danger to self or others or the community at large as a result of that person's, as demonstrated by, so at least you've got some objective criteria, past patterns of behavior or participation in incidents involving violence or threats of violence or by reason of a single incident of extreme conduct. I would point out to the committee that a lot of this language, in terms of as demonstrated by past patterns of behavior and participation in incidences, you know, people think lawyers talk in a lot of words. It seems to me the mental health profession uses even more words. A lot of this language is the same language that a sheriff will use if the sheriff decides that a person's not on the list but doesn't want to turn a gun over either. The standard for the sheriff in terms of demonstrated behavior would be basically the same, or an attempt to be made the same as what the mental health provider is doing. So what was attempted was that if a mental health provider felt that the person should not own a gun based on a basically past patterns and practices of behavior, that person would make a report to the mental health division, who would then maintain the list, and then two other issues came up. And first of all was whether or not the client should be notified that they had been placed on that list. It was, I think, tentatively agreed on that the client or patient would in fact be notified, but there was, I think, agreement that there should be a waiting period between the report and the client being notified, and that is 10 days as stated in here. The other provision that the new language includes is that if a patient or client objects to being placed on that list, that they would object and utilize the same appeals procedures that the committee is going to be setting up, and that it's going to be available to persons that are either denied concealed weapons permits or who deny the ability to purchase a gun. There are unresolved issues in this, but I think that the first issue that the committee needs to address, I have one other thing to say, and then I can highlight, I think, other issues or problems. One of the things that was suggested, and this is in my working outline, is that given some of the problems that creating a reporting requirement does, and there are more, that one of the ways that the committee could handle it would be to add other things to the Section 2 laundry list that would broaden that list but make it less definable than court documents. Representative Bryan raised the issue of police holds. There's the issue of hospitalizations that were not through the mental health division. There are other kinds of, for lack of a better word, I think, specific evidentiary actions that would be at least easier to prove, or there would be records someplace. I think that is an option that's open to the committee, so that you would broaden the list of prohibited persons. Again, I think that there are some issues. Let me just raise some of the other. So that's one way, I think, to handle some of the issues. It's my understanding that the Mental Health Division does maintain, and this is relevant to 2 as well as 4, does maintain a central list of all persons who were civilly committed. So if the mental health provider found out, then then that would trigger that. What's not clear in here, and I think which has to be addressed, is if a mental health provider reports a person and they contest the finding, it's unclear as to who's going to represent the mental health provider in the subsequent contested hearing. I think that's an unresolved issue. To complicate that issue even further, since we're going to, it is conceived that if a person, if a report is made and the client or patient wants to contest it, that the same appeals process that is being created would be available to them. I know that the committee has been very concerned about keeping lawyers out of that process and making that process as simple as possible. There are some proposed amendments or a general outline on that area, but the issue that really gets raised in that situation, and I think it's a similar issue here, is that you have to have a defendant in the case. In one of those cases, if you've been turned down for a gun or a license, the sheriff or some governmental entity is going to come in, and they're obviously going to want their attorney there. So that kind of takes you through it. Section 4 is being resentenced only because the first sentence is so long, and would basically start out with line 13. If the committee does this.
Is that a legal term?
Which?
Resentenced,
yes.
You lost me there for a minute.
Mr. Mary Grace would be very upset with that phrase.
Well, you know, when you realize you got a 15-line sentence, you're thinking.
Sister Mary Grace would be very upset with the 15-line sentence as well.
I wrote it.
And you were hammering the mental health provider.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sister Mary Grace would be very upset with your 15-line sentence as well.
It seems to me that this section, if there's a reporting requirement established, should really start on line 13 of the new language, and it would start something like, a provider or a mental health provider shall report when, and then take it from there. But the concepts that are included in here would be the same.
Council, I had a question. I take it from that.
Correct. Well, I think that if then
are people going to be subpoenaed in on a regular basis to
under Section 3 of the bill is if you filed your objections and then you use the procedures that are subsequently set forth, the provider who made the judgment would be subpoenaed into court and would then have to explain their findings. But it seemed like if you were creating a central list that had all these names and information on it, that there was no reason for that list itself to have the diagnosis or the reason or the medical judgment or whatever was in there on that particular list. But it would obviously become the grounds that would be under litigation.
So basically, if it...
What it's going to be is, I shouldn't say that, I misspoke. Obviously what the provider is going to say is that I think that there's a past pattern of behavior or participation in incidences, which means that you shouldn't have this gun. That's what they're going to be contesting. Now, whether or not the provider is going to use a DSM-3 diagnosis or going to come in and say, he or she walked into my office with a water pistol and sat there and shot me, I mean, the evidence that will be provided is going to depend on the facts of the case, but what's going to be under litigation is whether or not there is a demonstrated past pattern of behavior or participation in incidences, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Who's in court?
Counsel, I want to throw out several comments and ask you to respond to them, because the whole section seems to me to be just a total mess. It raises far more questions for me than it solves. Given the definition of healthcare provider to include, as I understand it, private psychologists and psychiatrists.
Sure.
I keep coming back to the balance of what this bill is trying to get at, and it seems to me that what you do here is you just destroy
client counselor relationships, because you know, already a good counselor will already open a counseling session by saying, by the way, anything that happens in here that rings my bell about child abuse, I've got a report, so you should know that. And we're adding, and that may, there may be other requirements.
Threat to another, the judiciary added it today.
Okay.
Threat to another one.
And now we're getting ready to add, I mean, it's not in the bill, but my guess is the professional ethics requirements of a counselor will say, I probably better disclose this to this client. If you tell me anything that makes me think that you're dangerous to yourself or others, I got to call the mental health division and tell them you can't own a gun. And I guess, what do we get for all of that, for including a private psychologist or psychiatrist? Well, we get a whole lot more people out there reporting. But what's the trade-off for it? I don't know. I guess I want to ask the question to the committee when we get ready to move this, whether all persons licensed to engage in the practice of psychology or psychiatry, whether that really fits in the definition of healthcare facility, and whether the definition wouldn't be better with that out of there. There's one point.
Representative Clark seemed to be raising an underlying question. Whether or not we should be getting into the confidentiality.
No, I'm not so much concerned about the confidentiality as I am about, as a practical matter, what this does. I mean, people go to psychologists for marriage problems, for drug addiction, for all kinds of reasons, and we're inserting a, seems to me, already a couple places where the state has said it's sufficiently important for us to intrude on that professional relationship, that counseling relationship, that we're going to do it. And here's another one, and this is important, and I understand that, but I guess I have to ask the question, how many times are you going to intrude on that client-counselor relationship? You know, the counselor's going to have to give somebody a menu. Here are the 17 things. If you tell me, I'm going to have to report to somebody.
Would the questions arise, would it drive people away?
Let alone if the person knows then that the counselor turned around and reported them, that's not going to do a whole lot for the client-counselor relationship. I think I'll cancel my Wednesday appointment. Why? Because you reported me to the mental health division on Tuesday. You know, I see problems with it. And maybe my problems all evaporate if we take out the private psychologist and psychiatrist and leave it to a hospital for mentally ill or training center for mentally retarded, private mental health care facility, or community mental health program. Those are institutions. That seems to me to be different.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, let me just respond, and then you can probably get some...
And I don't have an agenda on this. These are just my reactions.
I think that most of the people, all of those issues have been raised and gone over, and I'm not sure resolved to the satisfaction of all the participants. I think it's very clear that everybody is very, very concerned about somehow drawing a net that will identify as many people who, due to mental instability, should not own guns. But to draft something that broadens that net so that the holes are not so big that people are going to slip through every way is certainly been a challenge. In response to your comment, though, in the list that is there, hospitals for the mentally ill and the training centers are already going to include all your persons that are civilly committed. So you haven't done anything new there. Except because those people are going to be prohibited anyway. Community mental health programs, some percentage of those people are people that are going to have been committed and then put on outpatient treatment or are doing hospitalization follow-up. So in that sense, you're repeating your same list.
Does it help, though, for us to put these down here to require them to be reported so that the people know about it?
I'm not sure that you're going to add anything because of the requirement to really check the prohibited persons list and go through that. There's an obligation on the seller or the issuer of the permit to make sure that all those things haven't happened. And so I don't think that you're adding anything creating that duty to report.
It might be a lot more difficult for the person to figure that out.
That's true.
They've got to call every hospital in the country to figure out if.
Well, actually, there is some language in here that says people committed in other state systems. I mean, the issue, part of the issue really becomes a, how do I want to put this? What's the word? as almost a money issue, because you're more likely to have poor people that are going to be civilly committed through the state system. You're private commitments or private hospitals, and I think you end up with a there's a, certainly, I think, a potential discrimination factor there. But anyway, to respond to your comment, if you limit it, it's those people that are going to already be on the prohibited persons list anyway, potentially, and I'm not sure that you add that you've accomplished very much. I think now, perhaps, so you can understand my earlier comments about expanding the prohibited persons list to reflect events that have really occurred, that perhaps there are, for which there may not be court documents, right, so that you're at least broadening your base a little bit.
That gets to my other
but
concern.
But not so far that you know, you could swim through some of this.
I guess my other concern, Mr. Chair, which is the question of an appeal process for someone who's been reported under this.
Ended in this explanation? Okay. Taking my own biases out of it? Good.
For someone who's been reported under this situation, it's different than the appeal process for the person who's been convicted of a crime. Because that person can go into court and there's a fact. The fact is the fact of conviction. And that person can go in and say, notwithstanding this fact, I should be entitled to own a gun for the following reasons.
Adopted previously. So we, as we've been going, and the committee has made certain amendment proposals, this section was updated accordingly, I guess is what I'm attempting to say. So that takes us to, starting with page 8, if you want to start going through the technical amendments.
Take us through those, Council.
All right, starting on page 9, line 43.
Page 9 of
the bill. Now, for the time being, we have to go back to the original bill. I apologize. I have the original bill. I have not had a chance to update my memo. page 9, line 43, actually, that's already been taken care of. Every time where they talk about found guilty, convicted of a felony or found guilty except for insanity has all been updated. Page 10, between lines 8 and 9, the amendment was proposed that would insert the words, has been granted relief from a disability under Section 10 of this Act, or 18 U.S.C. 925. So this was, I think, proposed during the working group, which would basically say if you would have been on that list, but had you already been granted relief, that you could, in fact, be eligible for getting a permit. This, I believe, came out of the working group.
Counsel, I really hate to do this, but I've got a bill up in a hearing room, and I'm going to have to travel to, because if I leave, we're not going to have a quorum.
Right back.
I'll be right back.
I bet you say that to all the girls.
we'll see if we can get Representative Mannix here.
I say it to all
Mannix's
my committee
office
members.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we're going to take a short recess.
Sure. Now, if you're not...
Get him.
Temporary pro tem vice chair tag.
Kind of makes you want to treat him with a little more respect, doesn't it?
Yeah, finally.
We are on page 11 of the working document. And actually, the amendment that was, that's the words that are included on lines 9 and 10 and 11 of the working document are actually going to be moved and inserted on page 7, line 21 of the bill, and are going to be amended somewhat to read, has been granted relief from disability under USC 18 USC 925. Under federal law, if you have been convicted of a felony and then you apply for relief after a certain period of time, you can get it. So this will just make it cleaner. I mean, the original language is given to me by the working group was basically needed to be changed. So we need a motion.
You want to be moving on these as we go?
Yeah, we might as well.
Okay. Chair moves that page 9, line 42 be added, to the language be added, saying, or has been granted relief from the disability under 18 U.S.C. 925C. Is there any objection? So ordered.
Page 11. Now, we're in order to follow this, you got to go back and forth from the working document to the original bill. Page 11 deletes, starting at the top of the page, which is what you sign, and what the proposed amendment does is basically take out the language. Where are we? After the word felony, rather than saying I am not an unlawful user or addicted to controlled substances, blah 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 blah, through psychiatric security review board, that will all come out and insert instead, I have not been committed to the mental health division or comparable out-of-state agency in the past X years. The committee has to fill in the blank. That language was proposed and I think tentatively agreed to the working group. And I would point out that at least currently, the way the -6 amendments read, a commitment to the mental health division for purposes of prohibition of purchase of firearms is 4 years.
Now, why did we go 10 years on that one report? And
well, that's a very interesting question, Representative Bryan, and I don't have a good answer.
I have an answer. It had to do with who was present at the time. And it had to do with the fact that we had someone who represented mental health concerns who was concerned about anything much more beyond 4 years, and then we had the contrary concern about, well, there could be some long-term residuals of mental health that may not require commitment. Mr. Chairman, I move the proposal here for page 11, and that we include the one we just discussed, and that we include the language past 10 years. And as part of that motion, I also move that we change the 4 years provision to 10 years provision that we previously had already carried out.
So just to clarify and review for the committee then, if a person has a commitment, if you've been civilly committed for up to 10 years, you would be prohibited from purchasing a firearm as well as applying for a weapons permit, with the caveat that you would be able to use the appeals process if you wanted to.
That's correct.
Representative Mannix has so moved. Is there any discussion?
All right, so then we also have to go back and make all the fours tens. Okay.
Discussion? Objections? Without objection.
And okay. Page 11, line 41. The first one is delete the word sent and write shall be mailed by certified mail. This is the denial going to the applicant after the application has been made.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we amend line 41 to read mailed by first class mail.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, I think to be consistent, all of the denials in the bill have been by certified mail.
Has there been strong testimony or commentary as to why it has to be certified mail as opposed to first class mail?
I think that the issues raised by the working group and discussed by the committee was they wanted to assure delivery, so because of the denial and they didn't, because of the timelines were running and other things were happening, they wanted to just up the ante a little bit and assure that it arrived. If a denial comes out of DMV, it's by certified mail. But most denials out of state agencies and other governmental bodies, to the best of my recollection, are all by certified mail.
Are we requiring return receipt requested on any of this?
No.
All right, then I'll go back to mail by certified mail. I will move it as it's presented in the working document.
Chair.
Yes, for the discussion.
My experience has been that certified mail probably gets ignored more often than first-class mail, because certified mail, in my experience, is always bad news.
You don't have to go get it. You never have to pick it up.
I mean, it's always bad news, and so I forget, you know, the best way to make sure that somebody gets something is to send it to them in a plain white envelope, first-class mail, because they will open it. But from a legal standpoint, treating it with appropriate amount of gravity, I think it's probably appropriate to send it certified.
Okay. Without objection, it's ordered.
Page 11 deletes, well, actually there's two, let's break this down a little bit because this raises two issues. The first sentence is, raises three issues. The first one is, shall approver deny the permit within 30 days in writing? That number is lower than the current 45 days in statute. That's the issue number one. Listing the reasons for denial in writing is currently in the bill. I think it just is a little bit clearer than what's currently in the bill. And then the third part is the certified mail provision. So the policy issue is the 30 days, and the other two are, I think, more technical in nature.
Representative Maddox?
I move the proposed language from the working document. Yes.
Recognizing that you are bringing the number down.
Yes.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Without objection, so ordered.
Next.
Now the next one, page 23 of the working document, page 12, lines 41.
Page 23 of the working document?
No. Sorry, you wish. Page line 23 of the working document.
Thank you.
This was not a working group issue. This is a policy question of how long should these permits be valid. They're currently valid for 1 year under the bill as it's now written. It's 2 years. Some amendment, proposed amendment that came in, requested it go up to five.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I recommend that we leave it at 2 years because I think 2 years is a reasonable amount of time. Plus, I'd be concerned with whether or not we're always going to be able to pull these concealed weapons permits for people who subsequently have a criminal conviction or a mental illness problem. And we are expanding the current 1 year to 2 years. For the time being, I'd like to make it 2 years.
Thank you, Representative Maddox. I think that was also a key point in the study group that wanted that turnover so we could keep updating the permits.
I mean, for purposes of the record, I want to state that in compiling this, a majority of the proposed amendments did come out of the working group. However, in distilling all the other amendments that we got, if there were more than two on a particular issue, I listed it in my document either as a policy issue or a note just to remind the committee it was an issue that the committee had received testimony on. This is an example of something that was raised to the committee. It was not endorsed by the working group.
Thank you.
Hey, on page 12, line 15, there's another reference to 45 days.
Well, what we'll have to do with this 30 days is make all the conformance.
You can do that.
Okay.
In fact, it's my intention. In fact, I'll move right now that we change all the 45 days to 30 days in regard to that kind of activity. The sheriff returning to the applicant either the authorization or issuing the denial.
Sponsoring concealed weapons for this. Any objection? It's ordered.
Okay. Now we're to Section 8. We're in Section 8. No, Section 8. Yes.
Let me ask you, I don't know where the chair is.
Not here, so.
But.
Current chair sitting to my left.
Given, I may not be here for a whole lot longer tonight. Are there other, what I'll call more substantive decisions we need to make apart from the some of the technical stuff?
In 7 or 8 or in 9?
Anyway,
yes.
We can go to sooner rather than later.
Yes.
Okay, maybe we could do that before we do some more technical stuff.
If Representative Clark is going to be leaving, we'd be losing our quorum anyway.
I won't leave until the chair comes back. I'm feeling semi-sick and would sort of like to get out of here sooner rather than later, but if there's
he's very sick.
Substance rather than...
There is. That's, well, the other suggestion would be...
I see Mr. Nichols has a comment.
Yeah, John, go ahead and come forward, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Nichols, Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. We have reservations about moving the time frame on that the sheriff has to investigate for a concealed weapons license from 45 days back to 30 days. That's my understanding that sheriffs are rather insistent on that period of time, and we would have no objection to 45 days. And I really would like to check it out with them before anything were done like that.
Aaron
since
Clark?
They're not here.
Representative Mannix?
Would you be willing to have it be 30 days for the other responses, but 45 days for the concealed weapon responses?
No, it is 45 days. Oh, we're talking about.
I thought we also had, what about the, all right, I understand now. Okay, we're talking about both sets of responses on the concealed weapon permit.
Yes, sir.
Or both provisions regarding the responses.
Representative Bryan.
Sheriff, from our point of view, from the, quote, gun lobby point of view, we think 30 days is adequate. However, we did agree with the sheriffs on 45 days, and they did have good reasons for that, and we did agree with them on their position. So we would hate to have this pass without them having a chance to defend that to the committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Can we get the Speaker's office representative come forward also? Brian.
I was going to raise that issue, just trying to make it a little more compact. Sheriff Burks, I think, responded, if this is accurate, he responded that they preferred 45, they felt they could do it in 30, that would be the least amount of time they would want in statute, but they could live with it.
That was my understanding.
Representative Bryan and Chairman Calhoun, Cory McGregor, Speaker's Office. One thing in talking with Sheriff Burks this morning, his organization was getting cold feet at the direction the bill was heading. And it may be that 30 days is fine with them, but I would appreciate it if we could at least check that over with them before we actually adopt it.
Chairman? We had just amended it to go from 45 to 30 days, but I'm now going to move that we go back to the 45 days. To me, on the concealed weapon permit, that's not such a hot button for me that I'm willing to create a hot button for the sheriffs. And I just assume leave it then as it is in the printed bill at 45 days.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, it would be my suggestion, however, that you take the language on lines 20 to 22 of page 11 of my working document with the exception of the word put 45 back in, because I think it's just better written than the language that's in the bill, and it's clearer in terms of it being in writing.
Yes,
and having to
I agree with that. I'm only going back to change the 30 to 45.
Okay.
Well, I'll object to changing the 30 to 45. So I'll do a roll call. Representative Bryan sitting over here, so I guess
he's objecting to changing 30 to 45.
No, we're going to do a roll call.
Okay, Representative Mannix moves to. I would say it will be my intent to substitute counsel's language with 30 day requirement, 30 days being the maximum. I'm out of time. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bryan.
Wait a minute. Just to clarify, you're moving the language.
Motion to go back to 45.
No.
May I state my motion?
I thought it was his motion.
No. Well, it's his motion. Please state your motion.
My motion is to use counsel's language at lines 20 through 22 as of page 11 of the working document to amend the language in the bill, but to use 45 days rather than 30 days there. And also, since we had just before the chairman arrived, changed line 15 on page 12 to 30 days to return that to 45 days. That's my motion.
What was the second part of it?
The page 12, line 15, we had just changed that to 30 days from 45 days, and I'm moving us back to 45 on that also.
Call the roll.
Representative Bryant.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Chair Calhoun.
No. Motion carries. Okay. We're at 45 days. I'm not quite clear on what the second chunk of this is, but I noticed from
that's Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
Oh, good. Appropriate to say if you have not received your approval or denial within 45 days, deemed denied, and that you have the rights then, as if you had been denied, appeals and all that sort of stuff.
Know what it is. With no objection from Representative Bryan, we'll move that into the bill. We're gonna move a section in that says that if they don't receive the notice within 45 days, it shall be deemed denied, and it shall be the appropriate time to take an appeal. I wonder about doing it in the other direction, though, and saying that instead, or better, what if the sheriff's office doesn't make a decision in 45 days, the person shall have the permit? Because I'm looking at the. Yeah, I'm looking at this. If they made the decision, but the person hadn't received the notice, that would be one circumstance. But if they just were sitting on their thumbs, never making a decision, back with denying everybody and sending them into the court process, should we try to discourage that type of activity or not? Any comments from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, you want to set the default system where if they sit on the application,
I'm wondering if we did something like this, I think we could probably do it. We said that if the sheriff's office didn't make a decision within 45 calendar days, that the person would automatically.
I don't know if you can do that though, because as I understand a concealed weapons permit, it's paper that they're going to get.
Yeah.
And I don't know how. Your concern is well stated, Mr. Chair, which is that if. Denied at 45 days, then the agency loses all incentive to make a decision within 45 days.
Well, I think what it should do is probably trigger the right to appeal. So what we can do is we've already been that route.
Well, we've talked about that, and I don't know, there's still very little incentive at that point to move along with the decision.
I have an idea on
unless
that.
Unless that the denial and the ultimate issue would result in attorney's fees to the petitioner.
Do any of our experts have any help for us on this issue?
Chairman.
Speaker's office, might have something?
No.
I have no problem with saying, one, they have the appeal rights, and two, if on appeal that they succeed, not only will they have the other remedies that we had talked before about Representative Clark's provision to allow civil remedies throughout here, not only will they have those other remedies, but they'll have a civil remedy that is a civil punitive damages in the amount of, say, $20 per day for each day beyond the 45 days up to the time of the appeal. Some sort of civil damage remedy or
civil
$500 or whatever.
The civil penalties were for wrongfully keeping a bunch of records, so this is a little bit different.
Representative Max, my understanding is that the law enforcement people are vibrating on some of the things that we're talking about doing anyway. My view towards the balance of the working group. That would be my first reaction too, is say fine, put a $20 per day penalty on it. I think maybe this might be an issue that we want to come back to consult a bit with the law enforcement community and say, what can we do to encourage you?
About a default system where...
And I think the default system maybe is the default system is a little draconian. And you're permitted automatic appeal and all that. That there's got to be a better way to do it. And I think law enforcement people would have some ideas for us.
I would like to suggest as a starting point, a kickoff point for the working group, however, that when we get around to amending Section 11, which says a person denied a license under this, that part of that be include the part of the denial, the revocation, or the lack of...